That's right. You kids are having a ball. That's funny. Well, get over it. Now, what, may I ask, did you hope to accomplish by these shenanigans?
My personal goal, man, was to get the eggs onto the side of the house.
Well, the jokes keep on coming. Help me out, young fella. I can't see real good. Is that Bob Hope over there? Huh? You keep it up, pal. There's a big future in it. See, this reminds me of a spooky Halloween story. Dad, that's your cue. Once there was a boy who liked to throw things. He started out throwing eggs. Then he threw the big game. Then he threw back his shot of whiskey. Then he threw up. Then he got thrown out of the house. And then he moved into a van down by the river. Van lights.
Hi there, and welcome to Random Access Television, the podcast where we discuss a TV show that's been picked for us at random by our vintage supercomputer that we fed the name of every TV show in existence into. My name is Zach, alongside me is my co-host Nos, and join us as we watch whatever the computer has chosen for us this time. This time, for our Halloween Spooktacular, we look at the 1993 Halloween episode of Saturday Night Live. And, you know, we talk more about the show in general. So, Nos, have you ever heard of Saturday Night Live?
Well, Zach, I'm going to say that I am a little bit of a Saturday Night Live veteran, and I'm super excited to be here with everybody for our spooktacular episode.
Because Saturday Night Live has been on for so long, so much of it is available. Like, sometimes we'll watch a show that's been on for 30 years, but there's three episodes on YouTube and that's it. Not the thing here. Every episode is on Peacock currently, so.
But to the, my great ire is usually they are minus the music guests due to rights issues. And about half the sketches in some cages. So it's, they're around, but you have to look for them. Wink, yeah. Wink.
Since there's so much available, we're just going to be kind of weird. So we're going to focus on everything that happened for the show before our episode from 1993. So this segment's going to run a little bit longer than what usual, but please stick with me. The story of Saturday Night Live is, for the most part, the story of one man, producer Lorne Michaels. He was the creator of the show and showrunner for 39 of the show's 44 seasons. He was born Lorne Lipowitz, either in Canada or British Palestine / Israel, in November 17, 1944. After graduating from college, he worked briefly as a broadcaster on Canadian CBC Radio before moving to Los Angeles to get his first taste of the variety show world when he was a sketch writer for Ronan and Martin's Laugh-In and the Phyllis Diller variety show. Phyllis Diller is Beautiful or something like that. I forgot the name, but Phyllis Diller Beautiful Show.
Okay. I like that.
So after a few years in the States, he returned to Canada to co-host his own Laugh-In-style variety show called The Hart and Lorne Terrific Hour for two seasons, but then he returned to L.A. and worked steadily on TV specials throughout the early 70s. Now we flash forward to 1974. Johnny Carson, whose show was then on 6 days a week, requested that the reruns they played on Saturday nights be pulled so it wouldn't look so bad, because he only wanted to work 3 days a week, so there'd only be 2 days of reruns. He was a little lazy. This left a hole in the schedule, so NBC brought in executive Dick Ebersol to bring in then 33-year-old Lorne Michaels to produce a new variety show to air on Saturday night. Random bit of trivia here, it wasn't actually originally called Saturday Night Live, it was called NBC Saturday Night, mm-hmm. because there was a variety show called Saturday Night Live with Howard Cosell that premiered the same year.
It all comes back to Howard Cosell, doesn't it?
Yes, our previous guest, baseball, I guess, game. You could say, yeah. So when filling out the cast and writing crew, Michaels basically combined the forces of two groups, both mostly unheard of at the time. There was the Second City Improv Group, specifically from its Toronto offshoot, and the writers from the National Lampoon magazine, a satirical magazine written by Harvard students. The two groups had already combined and worked together for the National Lampoon Radio Hour that ran from 1973 to 74. The first episode with host George Carlin premiered October 11th, 1975, and was originally intended only to be one of six episodes that would rotate with the weekend news with a news magazine called Weekend. The first few episodes were much more like a standard variety show at the time, with multiple musical guests and guest stars. They were even thinking of getting a permanent host, comedian, what?
Oh, I was going to say the second episode, I think, the show is almost 75% Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah, there's like two sketches.
There's two sketches, and the rest is just Simon and Garfunkel. Like, it was very entertaining.
It was with the third episode that it really came to. And they were still at that point even thinking of having a permanent guest host.
Yeah.
Albert Brooks was the front runner. He later on did some things for them, some film pieces.
So
it quickly became apparent after they let them go that the real star of the show were the sketches and the then uncredited, not ready for prime time players. Yes. I'm mumbling today. All right. So by its second season, the show was a smash hit. Most of its cast members becoming huge instant stars, the first and most notable being National Lampoon alum Chevy Chase, who started the trend of cast members quitting the show to go on to become big movie stars when he left after a season and a half. Come the fifth season, the writing was kind of on the wall. Most of the original writers and cast members had either quit or were about to. Lorne Michaels was burnt out after 5 years of running the, well, kind of drug-fueled insane asylum that were the show's first 5 years. And so Michaels tried to put the show on hiatus or give it to his handpicked successor, writer and later senator Al Franken, but then current president of NBC, Fred Silverman, despised Michael and the show, and especially Al Franken, who made fun of him on the show several times.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
So he just hated Franken and refused to do any of this and took the show away from him. They put it in the hands of one of the few people to stick around, producer Gene Domanian, who she brought in an all-new cast of writers, all-new cast, and attempted to start fresh, just kind of as the show did in 1975 with a bunch of new, fresh-faced kids. It bombed terribly, not just in the ratings, but it just kind of stunk. The ratings went down to the point that the first of Saturday Night Live's many imitators, ABC's Fridays, was actually doing better in the ratings at that point.
Oh, wow.
Dominion was fired. Dick Ebersol, the guy who had hired Lorne Michaels to create the show, was brought in to produce. And all the cast members were fired, save Joe Piscopo and some skinny young kid named Eddie Murphy. Murphy essentially saved the show.
Yeah,
he was the first breakout star after the original cast, and the show was popular again while he was on it. So after Murphy left, Ebersol broke from the tradition of hiring unknowns and brought in established comedians like Martin Short and Billy Crystal to give his version of the show kind of one last push. But by the end of the season, a lot of the cast had left. Some of the big names were harder than they thought it would be. And they quit sometimes during the seasons. And Ebersol was tired of it as well. So he wanted to retool the show completely. NBC did the unthinkable and canceled the show.
Yeah.
Of course, it changed his mind. But only on the condition that Lorne Michaels come back to produce. So while he had been not producing that, he had tried to make his own Saturday Night Live-like show, The News Show. And that had bombed completely. I've watched half an episode and was bored out of my mind. I understand. Like Fridays has a couple of cast members, and if you look at a couple of writers that did something else, the new show, I'd never heard of any of those people. So,
yeah.
So coming back after five seasons, he decided once again to do an all-new, much younger cast than it had ever been before, including future Iron Man Robert Downey Jr. That didn't work either. The cast was too young, there was some behind-the-scenes stuff, and after the show was briefly canceled yet again, Michael agreed to retool the cast again, finishing the season with a sketch where all the cast members died in a fire. Except for the one that he decided to save personally, John Lovitz.
I mean, I would save John Lovitz, too.
Yeah. That pissed off the few remaining cast members that were left for some reason.
Yeah,
but,
probably. Yeah.
So this brings us to our episode from October 30th, 1993, hosted by Christian Slater. It features a cast that was a continuation of the one Michaels brought in after killing the rest of the cast in 1986. Whew. Okay, now we're to our episode. Christian Slater with the musical guest.
Smashing Pumpkins. Yeah. One of my favorites. I'm going to talk about them for the full 30 minutes. Just kidding. I'm going to, but I will be talking about them more. So.
All right, so we're now at the episode. Nos, okay. What did you think? Had you ever seen this episode before?
So I'm trying to remember because I love old Saturday Night Live. So first things first, I want to give a shout out to two books about the history of Saturday Night Live, if you're also inclined. There's one called Live from New York. It was published maybe about 6 years ago. Fantastic little behind the scenes write up of a lot of the stuff. And then John Belushi's widow wrote a book called Belushi, which I think is fantastic. So if you happen to be interested in the more history of SNL like I am, you can check those two out.
Oh, I'm a total SNL nerd too. In a lot of ways, the stats of it, right? Because the show has been on for, by the time this airs, 44 seasons. Right. It will have started. You know, how the longest cast member, how many times each person hosted, everything like that. I'm in a weird way kind of more into that than the show itself at times, but
right. No, then it makes sense. There's a lot of, I think one thing that I told Zach, but I texted Zach before we started talking, is that there, I could do a half hour about SNL on so many things. I could do it on the actors, or just one skit, or the movies that it spawned, or the music, or whatever. I could go on about it for hours. So I'm definitely going to be jumping around a lot and trying to rein in my 10 pages of notes here.
Oh, but it was so hard writing that. I mean, that was probably the longest intro I've ever written, and it was still impossible to not just mention every single cast member and every single writer and every single sketch.
Yeah.
And that just takes us to 1993, which was, geez, I don't even want to know how long ago.
It was a long time. However, I remember it fairly well. I mean, this was the golden age of Mike Myers, who actually opens our episode doing the coffee talk sketch, where he is dressed up as this very older Jewish looking woman from probably Long Island. And he's dressed up as her and talking about Barbra Streisand and taking calls. And I love it. Mike Myers, rewatching him work in not in Wayne's World or Austin Powers, but just rewatching him do sketches is such a joy. I love him.
I'll be honest, this sketch never really did all that much for me, but I've never been to New York. I think I'm missing a little bit of it there.
You just don't have a Jewish grandma. That's all.
That is definitely true. I do not have a Jewish grandma.
That's all. The character he does reminds me of many people from my family.
My grandparents were reserved Midwesterners.
Exactly. And I will say, as far as, this was a Halloween themed episode. Mm-hmm. So of course, Smashing Pumpkins was the natural choice. Was Christian Slater? What?
I just slapped my head because I just got pumpkin smashing Halloween. How did I never put two and two together until right now?
Well, and they were debuting their album, Siamese Dream. Not debuting, but their second album, Siamese Dream.
Yeah, let's just go sketch by sketch here. I think that's the best way to do it because there's, 90 minutes or I guess 50 with no commercials.
Right.
So it starts off with the coffee talk. And then it goes to Christian Slater's monologue. So here's the weird thing. When I was starting to watch this episode, I accidentally started the Halloween episode from 1991, also had Christian Slater in it.
Yeah.
For some weird reason, he only hosted two episodes, and they were both Halloween episodes. So he does his monologue. I thought it was really boring.
It was,
he goes trick-or-treating, and there's some, behind-the-scenes thing. It's one of those things, one of those sketches, one of the reoccurring monologues sketches, where they go around the studio and visit all the cast members, getting into costumes and everything, and Lorne Michaels is inevitably there. In this case, he was hitting on Mike Myers as Linda Richman. I thought that was the only decent joke in that.
I was scared.
And then Chris Farley comes out as a big
giant pumpkin.
Full of energy. And
I've got to say, okay, so here's the thing. Here's the thing, everybody. My two crushes were in this show. Basically, Billy Corgan and Chris Farley are like, I love them both. But I will talk about Billy Corgan in a second. Let's talk about Chris Farley. I think he was the most talented SNL cast member of all time.
I can really see that, or at the very least, the most charismatic.
Absolutely.
Because he might, I think there were more technically talented ones, something like Dana Carvey, for instance.
Yeah, maybe like Steve Martin, I guess.
Not a cast member. But
not that one. But
No, he wasn't a cast member. He was never a cast member.
Oh, he wasn't. Oh, not technically. No. He was just a guest. No.
Right. He only was a guest, and I think only about 10 times in total.
Oh my gosh. Well, there you go. See what memory does to you. It fails you.
Well, everybody kind of thinks he's a cast member. I mean, you know, he's King Tut and Wild and Crazy Guys.
The two Wild and Crazy Guys. This episode is just me like imitating SNL skits. Oh,
and especially this 1993 era. This was like the era of catchphrases. The 90s was the catchphrasiest. Like, they don't show up in here, but, you know, there was Wayne's World with its swings and everything. And then there was, you know, the copier guy who could have showed up, and it's Pat.
I mean, back to Farley. Like, I've mentioned before, I am an unabashed John Belushi fan. I absolutely adore John Belushi. I love Gilda Radner. You know, Will Ferrell's like 90s stuff was fantastic. Chris Farley, the second he's on screen,
he approved every sketch he was ever
absolutely
in instantaneously. Absolutely. And like I said, not necessarily the most talented, but definitely the most charismatic. Yeah. You just want to love the guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, you know, while we're talking here, and maybe I'll edit this in earlier to where, what is your Saturday Night Live experience? How much of the show have you watched? What's your favorite? What did you grow up with? And then always that question of, like, what's your favorite era?
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, so I grew up, I grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, and, you know, blah, 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 the 90s as a whole. My dad used to watch it late every Saturday night. He loved it. My dad was a huge fan. And I would wake up as a kid and come out into the living room and watch it with him. So I saw, I would say, a good part of the 90s era. I was head over heels in love with Wayne's World when I was a little kid. I just thought it was the funniest, greatest thing. The movies both hold up fantastically. They're just flawless. So yeah, I grew up with the 90s era stuff. This would have been right in the sweet spot for me. This was, you know, 93. So I was just like starting to get some of the jokes kind of. I didn't get everything because I was still a kid. And then when I was older, back when they began to air SNL, they for a little while, they aired the SNL in full on Hulu. Some years ago, and me and my husband decided to embark on the task of watching SNL, basically. So I watched the 70s ones, completely fell in love. I think by far, as much as I love the 90s stuff, which is great, the early Chevy Chase, Belushi, Radner, you know, I love it. Yeah. What about you?
Okay, so me. So here's the funny thing. There is zero chance I could stay up to actually watch it or wake up. I was always the first kid to fall asleep, and my family just in general kind of woke up at 5 in the morning anyways. We were just always early risers, so I never actually started to watch it. But come middle school in the summers, a local town got Comedy Central, and Comedy Central got Saturday Night Live reruns and would play them ad nauseum, like 20 times a day. But the funny thing is they weren't playing either the 70s ones or the more recent 90s ones. They were playing the ones from the early 80s and the mid 80s. So I saw the Eddie Murphy era over and over and over and over.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, they later on added some of those later 90s ones with the Phil Hartman, Dana Carvey, Mike Myers, Jan Hooks kind of era, which this episode we're watching today is kind of the tail end of that. So I got to see those. But like when the first Wayne's World came out, I don't know if Comedy Central was showing Wayne's World era episodes yet. So I had never actually even seen one of the sketches before I saw the movie.
Oh, that, I mean, That's, I mean, I think, like, once you watch the movie, I mean, you get the point.
Yeah, exactly. It was good. Just, yeah, pretty much. And then I started watching it later on, either because I was able to stay up or I got a DVR, and I don't think I've missed any episodes save one or two that I've intentionally skipped since about 2004 or 5.
Wow, good for you. Good job.
Yeah, so basically the entire Kenan Thompson era. He's still on.
he's still got
And
it.
Then I've tried to go back and watch the 70s ones, but I've had to force myself to finish each episode. Whatever reason, they just do not jive with me.
Yeah, which is funny because I'm going to say, honestly, the ones from 2010 on, I really don't like them. It's not my type of humor anymore. At some point, it kind of lost a little bit of that edge, and we could launch into an hour-long conversation about the good and bad of that quote-unquote edge.
So after the monologue, there was a game show or a commercial parody for a board game called It was a single joke that
it was stupid.
It was really bad. And then we get to more Chris Farley doing his Matt Foley, the inspirational speaker.
And I live in a van down by the river.
And that's how this episode, our episode today, starts with a clip from him. So you couldn't not. I mean, I was thinking, we're going to start it with the Linda Richman where she says live from New York. Let's go with Chris. My favorite part about those sketches is trying to watch the other cast members, especially
David Spade,
trying not to crack up.
He was like, that's one of the things that I love about Saturday Night Live is the fact is watching all the actors interact with each other. And this is a perfect example. Like, you know, Chris Farley is bellowing in David Spade's ear, and David Spade is like laughing so hard, and he looks like he's about to lose it. It's great.
And at one point, he carries him around like a baby, and then crashes through a table. And David Spade looked actually like physically hurt, but was trying not to. It was kind of so fun. Those two just loved each other so much. All right. So after that, it goes to now. What was I talking about? The catchphrase era. The sassiest boys sketch.
And they did the sassiest boys sketch a couple of times. This was actually not one of the better ones, though. They did nail Andrew McCarthy impression.
Christian Slater playing himself, and then
Joey Lawrence,
which was great because all he said was whoa.
And it was Mike Myers. Younger viewers and listeners from 90210 original run. No,
Blossom.
From Blossom. Oh my god, I'm so sorry. Yep, that's you're okay. Right. Oh my god, I'm an idiot.
No, it's all right. I only know that because I've been rewatching I've been watching Blossom for the first time recently, so he's kind of front of mind. And then there was Jay Moore, who was only on the show for one season as Andrew McCarthy, and I didn't know him well enough, but I knew that was a Pitch Perfect impression somehow.
Yeah, it was great.
But basically the premise of the sketch is that Phil Hartman will just look to the camera and go, sassy. This is the third and final one of those. So
yeah. And I mean, that's the bit. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. They even call him on at the end. Like, all you do is say sassy. What's the point?
Sassy. So. Yeah. It wasn't even that funny or that well put together. And I think maybe what I like about some of these is that they were utterly not funny.
Right. I mean, that's the thing with Saturday Night Live is everybody has nostalgia goggles on for the sketches they remember. If you talk to boomers, they'll talk about the cheeseburger and forget the five other sketches that they didn't laugh at that same episode.
That are very, I mean, especially the 70s ones, some of the stuff is bizarre.
Well, and not necessarily even in a good way. Or just weird, like the bee sketches or like 30 of those.
I love the bee sketches, which...
All right.
Congratulations, it's a drone.
All right, so then we had the Smashing Pumpkins.
Take it away. Okay, well, so here's the thing. I grew up in Smashing Pumpkins era. Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness was like the hugest album for many years of my life. As I said before, they were debuting Siamese Dream, their second album, Billy still has his hair. Bless him so much. He went bald super early. And
yeah, but he's still dressed like Fez from that 70s
and
show.
And he dressed like Fez from that 70s show. And they had a big like 70s vibe starting out. They were super inspired by Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin. And kind of dropped that in Melancholy. As you know, they kind of went more like goth.
Which is when I started to actually enjoy them and listen to them. I've listened to Melancholy multiple times, but I don't think I've ever listened to another one of their albums. But as I've also talked about many times before on this show, I am not a music guy.
Zach is not a music guy, and that's okay. I'm a super music guy. You could tell that Billy gave the band, not just Billy, the band gave 110% on Cherub Rock. They
You know who didn't, though? Who? The mic guy who set it up, because in that first one you couldn't hear him about half the time
because it wasn't tall enough, because Billy's so tall, and they set it like Darcy level.
It was fixed by the second performance, but I was feeling so bad because unless he was screaming, you couldn't hear about half of what he was saying. I kind of had to fill in the rest from listening to the song and over.
Yeah, I know the type of guy Billy Corgan is. That must have bugged him so badly. Oh,
yeah. It was definitely fixed by the second one.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, I loved seeing it. Yeah, I have total, you know, I actually wasn't even that into Smashing Pumpkins when I was younger, but my husband is very into them, and once we got together, he started showing me, like, some documentaries and cool facts and things like that, and I fell in love with them as an adult. So, yeah, they were great. I love them all.
I mean, just in general, when I'm watching a Saturday Night Live episode to show how much of a non-music guy it is, I probably watch the performances maybe once a season, twice a season. I just kind of fast forward through them, even if it's a group that I like. I've just never been a music guy.
I mean, I'm going to say as far as like musical guests on SNL, the 90s were absolutely the best. The 70s guests sucked. The 80s guests were.
I'm gonna disagree. I don't even like the music, but I love that the 70s they were willing to put on just completely weird acts. Like nowadays, I mean, starting with the Lorne Michaels when he came back in the 80s, every year, let's say there's 20 episodes, 18 of them will be very mainstream, regular acts. Right. But in the 70s, they would put on acts before they were big or before they ever became big. You know, they put on punk bands and B-52s and like weird jazz trios and things
That's
like that.
That's true.
I think that kind of appreciated the punk aspects of it, even the non-punk music, you know.
Right. I'm going to Google this really fast, but I think Sun Ra might have done an SNL episode.
Yeah, Sun Ra definitely did.
They did. Yeah, they absolutely did. That's wild.
When Fear came out there and destroyed the stage, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, I'll walk that back a little bit. However, I do think that the 90s is where, I mean, you know, it was MTV Unplugged era and everything like that. They really dialed the live music stuff in.
Yeah, I agree. It was definitely better than before because they've been doing lip syncing for the last 20 plus years at this point, which I kind of understand. It's a live show. You got to do whatever. They're usually lip syncs of live performances, but still, yeah, I mean, they're just there to promote the bands now, which is, you know, fine. So after the Smashing Pumpkins, there was the Weekend Update, which
was really bad.
Yes, I was about to say, it's usually the highlight of even the bad seasons, the Weekend Update is, but it might be an inverse way, is because I swear when the show is at its best, the Update is at its worst.
That's vice versa. So true.
This was during the Kevin Nealon era. The only thing I really liked about Update in this particular thing was them, you know, Update is their satirical news segment. If you've never watched the show, I know we have viewers in Europe, and I don't know if those translate over there. They would do jokes like have a silly picture up and make a comment about it, and they used to do that up until the late 90s, and I kind of missed that gag. But every joke was basically, hey, it's sex, or hey, I'm mentioning a celebrity, and that was it. It was like they were like Family Guy style jokes, basically. Yep. Ellen Cleghorn came out as her character Shaniqua and did a long ramble about Whoopi Goldberg and Sam from Cheers, who's the actor, I can't remember the name.
Ted Danson's
recent dalliance/dalliance with blackface, and it was just
It was so cringe and just like, oh man, it was like the one thing. I mean, there was like a handful of things, but it was the one glaring thing in the episode that like did not withstand the test of time.
Well, at one point they also say the R word for people with disabilities, which also really stood out. Yeah. And that sketch, by the way, not on Peacock. I suspect that's the reason why. So the only bit that I really enjoyed was Adam Sandler's Halloween costumes.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. I can't stand Adam Sandler.
You know, I couldn't then. Uh-huh. And I couldn't until really recently, and I've just kind of come to him. He's like,
you know,
he's
why?
Grown on me over the years.
You know why? Because you're a dad.
I am a dad now.
And it changes the brain.
It must really do that. You know, I'm watching Full House unironically now,
right.
By myself. Maybe it did, or just softened on him, or just kind of having a Stockholm syndrome of having him around for 40 years or whatever at this point. I've always kind of liked his shtick. I'm going to go actually ahead and play a little bit of it here. You can hear Adam Sandler's voice, one of the stock voices that he does, in an earlier form.
And now here with some more Halloween costume ideas is Weekend Update's Adam Sandler. Adam?
Thank you, Kevin. Well, every year I like to offer some suggestion to the kiddies out there on trick-or-treating how they can spend their money and get the best quality Halloween costume at a cheap cost. So just kids, why don't you just this year use your face? You can go as a crazy big-eyed man.
Hey, look at me. I'm crazy big-eyed man. I want some candy. Get some candy, the crazy big-eyed man. My eyes are too damn big for my head. Now give me the candy.
Or go as shaky lip guy. I'm shaky lip guy. Look at my lip. It won't stop shaking. Isn't that awful? So do me a favor and give me some candy.
I mean, I think it's, you know, I think... I appreciate what Adam Sandler has done for our people, and Billy Madison is a good film, but they were trying to fill that Andy Kaufman hole, and it just, I don't know, it never vibed with me.
Fair enough. Then we had the band name sketch, where most of the younger cast members of the show sit around pretending to be high schoolers, and it's a sketch that starts nowhere, and goes nowhere.
There were so many opportunities for good bits, but the only part is Chris Farley makes everything he says is funny and the rest of it is stupid.
Yeah, it just, well, and it seemed to have like seven different premises. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, now this is going to be about weed. Nope, we're not going to drop that. Oh, it's going to be about bad band names. Nope, we're not going to go with that. Oh, right. It's going to be about him yelling at his mom. Nope, we're not going to go.
They couldn't find the thread. They just couldn't find the thread.
It really had the feeling of just combining several things from a really sleepy writer's room at 3 a.m.
Totally. And I was sad because it just, and especially with Smashing Pumpkins as the guests, and this was before, well, I don't know, sometimes they would integrate the musical guests into the skits. Then.
It was more of a kind of a 70s and 2000s thing. I don't think they really did it in the 80s and 90s.
Maybe not, but I thought they missed the perfect opportunity for that one. It was really glaring. I mean, Smashing Pumpkins, come on.
Yeah. So after that is, well, we were talking about catchphrases earlier. This was clearly an attempt to start a new one. There was a head shop where basically Rob Schneider and Christian Slater ran a head shop, and everything. The joke line was, "You can put some weed in it."
I laughed really hard at this one because I'm stupid.
Well, here's the funny thing: is like the first time I was like, "You know, that's pretty funny," and then. Oh my God, they're going to keep saying it. And then the 700th time, I was like, okay, this is actually getting funny. And then the 800th time, I hated it. Right. It's just kind of that.
You went through the full range of emotions.
The whole range of emotions, yeah. It was also the only sketch that really felt particularly long. All the sketches felt much shorter than current sketches.
Definitely. And it also reminded me that Rob Schneider, when he was doing just the short skit, like bit characters, he was great. He did not start to suck until he had his own movies.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's some people who are supporting cast members and some people who aren't. Yeah. I mean, David Spade, for instance, can be very funny in short little bits.
Right.
But the few times they gave him his own movie, or his own TV show. Yeah. It just didn't work.
Totally.
All right. So now we get to, I want to say, the worst sketch of the night, the Valancourt Boys. So this was Kevin Nealon and Adam Sandler doing the absolute worst Boston accents I have ever heard.
He didn't even get the Boston accent right. They lapsed into Australian numerous times.
Uh-huh. It was just bad. It was, I mean, if you want to see it done good, go back to the early 2000s and see the sketches with Jimmy Fallon and Rachel Dratch and Seth Meyers, where they were doing the Boston kids.
Yeah.
This was just awful. It's also the one that had the R word in it.
And of course it's a Sandler sketch because a lot of his stuff is misses. It's just a lot of his stuff is misses.
And now we get to the headline store. So this one has a weird premise. So Christian Slater is running a novelty headline store where you go there and you do a headline for like a birthday present. But all his headlines are person standing in front of him is stupid.
Right.
It didn't make any sense.
I
applaud them for trying it, but it was terrible.
Well, I liked it because at the end, Chris Farley killed him.
Well, yeah, and that's that was also the clearly, we don't know how to end this sketch, so we're just going to have somebody shoot somebody. Yeah. Which, you know, that goes back to, that's fine. Like, some of my favorite TV comedians, Olsen and Johnson and Hell's a Poppin', they would end up almost every other sketch with them just shooting people and whatever, but
that's the best way to do it, I think. To be honest, if I had some sort of comedy show, that's how it would end. It's just like somebody shooting someone else, just like really comically, not a serious thing, obviously, but like just like, that's it, man, kaboom.
And then finally, so this is what the guys on the AV Club called the 10-to-1 sketch. It's a sketch that's right after the final music act.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's cut, sometimes it's not. And it's usually where they dump either the most obscene sketch or the weirdest sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was Trent Markham. You know what? I've actually already forgotten what this sketch was about.
Oh, the lung cancer doctor. Right. The lung doctor. So
it was a parody of a 50s doctor show where everybody was smoking and he was a lung doctor.
And it was in black and white and he was like, you have a terminal lung infection. And the guy like picks up a cigarette and he's like, give it to me straight, doc. And it's like, it's stupid. It was stupid.
Yeah, it was stupid. And, well, I mean, nobody smoked funnier ever than Phil Hartman.
Right.
But my favorite / least favorite thing about it was that none of the audience was laughing.
Right.
Maybe they were just tired. Maybe they didn't get the pretty obvious to me joke, but, you know, there you go.
I thought it was, I mean, it was stupid, but it was cute, and it was, like, better than the Boston one, so I was like,
it was probably the best sketch after the head shop, but that's not saying something.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and play a clip here so you can hear both Phil Hartman and the lack of audience response.
Give it to me straight, Doc.
Dick, there's no way around it. Somehow you've contracted lung fever.
Why? Why him?
Doctor, do you have any idea how this could have happened?
All we know is that somehow the lung fever germ got into your system. Could have been from something you ate, something you drank, even from shaking the hands of a stranger with lung fever.
Does this mean I won't be able to run the big marathon?
It's too early to tell.
What difference does it make? So what if you win another trophy, another silver cup to stick up on the mantelpiece to put your cigarettes in? We're talking about your life here.
Edna, may I have a word with you?
Please excuse us, darling.
Afraid I've done all I can. God knows how many nights I've stayed up drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, and reading the medical journals, trying to find the answer to this lung fever riddle.
So that was it for that particular episode. I think that was a pretty good representation of mid-90s, early
Absolutely.
90s Saturday Night Live.
I would say, I think this is a great like example of just a really golden era SNL. If you don't know what SNL is and you feel like you want to know, then absolutely, you know, head on over to this one was on Peacock, so head on over to Peacock if you happen to have it and you can watch it for yourself.
It's actually free. Peacock free. It's free. It's on SNL. I would say if you've never watched an SNL, either pick the most recent episode or any random episode from 1998 to 92 or 93.
Yeah.
those I think are the most time. I think it's the most timeless era because it was so catchphrase dependent and not so topical as it is now or if it was earlier.
It's very accessible. It's not as weird as the 70s stuff. And it's not as iffy as the very modern ones.
Right. And in general, like certain eras were more also topical. I mean, I lived in the United States in 1993 and I, you know, read a lot of history of the era and I still didn't get every single one of the jokes.
No, I didn't either. I didn't either. Yeah.
So if I was if I had never watched Saturday Night Live, they're pretty baffling going backwards in time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of it is actually kind of funny to think that, like, why did this even appeal to me as a child? Like,
Well, I mean, just, and in a lot of ways, Saturday Night Live is that ultimate show for a lot of people. Right. It's because it's a glimpse into the adult world. Where they're making jokes about Ed Koch or Monica Lewinsky or Gerald Ford, and you may have heard the names, but you didn't know anything. But now you know the one thing. I don't know. Ed Koch is bald or whatever the joke that they made.
Exactly. Exactly.
And now you have that one little thing you can talk to with adults if you ever felt like it. You know,
that's
a
really good point. Yeah.
You too can make a Menendez brothers joke.
Yep. Yep. That's a really, really excellent point. I like the way you phrased that a lot. It was just such a... It was, yeah, at the time, you know, it was very, it would put you in conversation with adults. Yeah, I like the way you said that. That's good.
Yeah, I always felt a little smarter after watching every episode, even if I didn't actually know what they were talking about. But I knew the name Idi Amin now, and that was good enough.
Exactly.
So this was, like I said, the end of a long era from 86 to 94. It was really stable cast. I mean, it changed in and out, you know, cast members left. Like this was the last season, for instance, for Phil Hartman and Adam Sandler. But there wasn't the big every five year cast shuffles like there had been in the past. But by 1995, that was going to happen again. It was a new cast took over for what has so far been the final time. It was another mini disaster. It didn't work out at all. They brought in some ringers again, like Michael McKean and Mark McKinney from Kids in the Hall. And they brought in some fresh faces like Judy Garofalo, and that really bombed. It didn't really work, but the new cast members started to kind of land, like Will Ferrell, like you mentioned before. Yeah. And
Chris Kattan,
Molly Shannon. There was, you know, that whole era. It wasn't the greatest era, but it was a start.
It was pretty memorable, I think. I think that was also when stuff started to, like, you know, you'd start to see a lot of the stuff on t-shirts. You'd see it being parodied in other media, you know.
Yeah, it was definitely, again, more of that catchphrasey sort of thing. So by the time the new millennium rolled around, the show became a machine.
Yeah.
And it still is. Yeah. Sure, cast members come and go. Some on their own, some are fired. But since the late 90s, there's just always been a solid group of cast members staying from year to year. No mass firings, mass quittings, or huge shakeups. Just one year basically flowing into the next.
It's just an institution.
It's an institution. Yep. It's a machine now. Yep. I mean, there's been drama. You know, COVID shut them down for a while. Right. And I thought they did some really good episodes from home. And there was the deserved criticism that the show got a few years ago about the lack of representation amongst the cast and writing staff.
Yeah.
I mean, for the vast majority of the time on the air, there was only one non-white person on the entire cast, and it was always a black guy.
Right.
That's it. One African-American male, like, oh, that's all we need. Mm-hmm. But that's pretty much largely over, at least in front of the camera. I can't speak for the writer's room.
Right.
And the show, I think it's going to go on forever. Or at least as long as Lorne Michaels, who's 77 years old, only 77 years old, is still alive. As of last season, by the way, the 2020 to 2021 fall season, it's the number one non-sports show on television.
Yeah. I think it's the one thing that's always, it's as of, you know, 30, whatever, how many years, 40 years? Oh my God, 44. I'm old. You know. Yeah. From then to a couple decades in the future, if we still are here and are not baked alive by the sun, it's going to keep getting buzz. It always does.
And it's because it's live, it's one show that people still watch live. Yep. I mean, they even made a really smart decision a few years ago to start showing it live, not only on the East Coast, but on all coasts.
Right.
So if you wanted to, you can start watching it at 8:30 out here west where we are. Mm-hmm. And you can watch it the whole nation on Twitter, or, you know, the 4 or 5 million people who watch it all together live on Twitter tweeting. Watching it live. Yeah. Oh, this show's this gosh. Oh, sucked. Oh, can you believe Jim Carrey showed up or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is it for that. We'll do a quick review here because we've given all of our opinions so far of the actual episode we watched. A to F, standard American, North American grading system. What would you give this episode?
All right. Well, Smashing Pumpkins, you guys get an A+. However, for the episode itself, I'd B minus this one. You know, again, Farley's great. There were moments of awesomeness, and a lot of it was just like, eh. So yeah, B minus.
Yep. B minus, I'd say as well. That's just, you know, which is, I think, kind of where the show lives in that era now. Mm-hmm. Where they're trying for a couple of pieces to go viral, and then the updates are actually really good right now.
I will give them that. Yeah, the updates are really good, and like you'll get the breakout sketches, like the Matt Damon Kavanaugh one, A+. You know, and then like a lot of them will just be like, "Eh, that was all right."
Yep, and as long as Kenan Thompson's on there, I'll be happy. Exactly. Even if there's rumors that he might be leaving. Kenan Thompson from All That, our previously covered show.
I'll never let you go. I'll never let you go.
I wish your sitcom was better. Anyways. We're going to open the door to the computer room because it's an old computer. It takes up a whole room. Get that card punch reader going and... Oh, all right. We're going back to Saturday morning, specifically the early 90s. It is the MC Hammer... as superhero cartoon Hammer Man.
Oh, wow. I loved this show as a kid. Let's see if it holds up. Probably not.
I don't know if there was a single licensed show that ever did, but let's give it a shot. We always go in with an open mind.
Absolutely.
There's a compilation on YouTube. I put that in our Random Access playlist as well. Go ahead there. We'll watch the first two episodes on that, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time. Thanks for tuning into this episode of Random Access Television. And if you haven't already, please remember to subscribe to us on Apple and Spotify podcasts. We also love to read reviews, so go ahead and leave us one. You can find us at RATVPod, that's RATVPOD at twitter.com. And if you have questions, complaints, compliments, recipes, email us at RATVPod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Bye-bye.